Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're pulling back the curtain on something really foundational, but maybe overlooked. Auditing.
Right, the whole world of financial checks and balances.
Exactly. We got a stack of sources here outlining the rules, and, well, our mission is to unpack the ethical challenges and the, you know, rigorous checks that protect our trust in financial reports.
Yeah, and it's fascinating stuff, not just number crunching. A lot rests on the auditor's shoulders. Take client confidentiality is huge.
It is, definitely a core principle.
Yeah.
But I was thinking it was absolute, you know. Our sources suggest, well, there are exceptions. When does an auditor have to talk?
Yeah, that's where it gets really interesting. It's not absolute at all. There are specific legal reasons like court orders or investigating money laundering where auditors either must disclose or sometimes can disclose without client consent.
Okay.
Think about that waste disposal company example. If, say, the tax authorities or police suspect fraud, the auditor can't just stonewall, but they also can't just hand everything over.
Right. Tricky.
Very. They need legal advice. They have to figure out if there's a duty to disclose. And crucially, they must be careful not to tip off the client if there's, you know, a fraud investigation going on. It's a real tightrope walk.
Wow. Okay. That sounds incredibly complex. So keeping secrets is complicated, but then there's the flip side, being independent, being seen to be unbiased.
Exactly. Auditor independence, it's just as critical. And our sources talk about these threats to independence. Things like familiarity or self-interest.
Yeah, the PinkCo example really brings those to life. Let's talk about that.
Okay, so the engagement partner had been on the audit for 7 years. That's a classic familiarity threat.
7 years is a long time.
It is. After that long, you might maybe subconsciously get a bit too comfortable. Less likely to challenge things.
Right. You lose that critical edge.
Potentially.
Yeah.
So safeguards are needed, like rotating the partner off the engagement or maybe having an independent quality review.
And what about self-interest threats?
Mm.
Like the partner's son be on the audit team?
Yeah, that's a pretty clear self-interest or maybe even intimidation threat. The partner might hesitate to be tough if their son's work is involved, or the son might feel pressured. The safeguard. Simple, don't have him on the team.
Okay. Straightforward enough. But what about things like client hospitality? Say, a day at the races. It's not a yacht, but still.
It's still generally a no-go.
Yeah.
Unless the value is really, truly trivial, it creates that feeling of, well, maybe owing the client something. A self-interest threat again.
Right. Which leads to another one. Outstanding audit fees. That seems like a big potential conflict.
Oh, absolutely. How objective can you really be if you're basically acting like a lender because the client owes you money from last year?
Yeah, you might subconsciously pull your punches.
Exactly. It's a self-interest threat that can undermine the whole audit before you even start. Best practice, get paid or have clear arrangements before the main audit work kicks off.
Okay, so that's the individual auditor's ethics.
Right.
But how do firms make sure everyone follows these standards and quality control, right?
Precisely. Firms need their own robust internal checks. But things can slip through. Our sources had examples.
Like?
Well, client A had working papers, the auditor's notes that weren't signed or dated. That just kills accountability. Who did the work? When?
Hmm. Basic stuff.
It should be. Then client B, the auditors, failed to get this mandatory representation letter from management. It's a formal letter where management confirms key things about the accounts. Without it, you don't have sufficient evidence, period.
In client C.
Incomplete testing. They picked a sample of items to check, but didn't check enough of them. You can't draw reliable conclusions, and you might easily miss fraud or errors.
These aren't just small errors, then. They fundamentally weaken the audit.
Mm.
Okay, stepping back a bit, there's this bigger picture concept, corporate governance. What is that exactly?
It's basically how a company is directed and controlled, but importantly, it's meant to be in the interests of all stakeholders, not just, say, the shareholders.
And why do auditors care so much about a company's governance?
Because good governance makes their job easier, frankly. It reduces the risk of things going wrong, like misstatements or fraud. Strong governance usually means more reliable internal controls and financial reporting. It builds public confidence, too.
Okay. And the Tangerine Tech Co. examples showed some common weaknesses in governance.
Mm-hmm.
What can we learn from that? And why should, you know, you listening care about board structure?
Right. So Tangerine had too many executive directors compared to non-executives or NEDs. You want a good balance, ideally at least half independent NEDs, to provide proper oversight and challenge.
Okay.
Plus, some of their NEDs were former executives. that compromises their independence. Are they really going to challenge their old colleagues effectively?
Probably not.
Less likely. And then you had the board chair also chairing the audit committee. That's too much power concentration. And the audit committee itself lacked financial expertise. That's a huge red flag.
So the audit committee needs teeth, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Independent people with financial know-how.
Exactly. They need at least one person with recent relevant financial experience. These aren't just boardroom formalities. They directly affect the quality and reliability of the financial information you rely on.
So really, what stands out from all this is just the sheer level of constant vigilance needed. It's principles, ethics, controls.
It really is. It's about maintaining that public trust. It's not static. It's this dynamic process of managing all these different risks and just upholding integrity.
Absolutely. Far more than just checking numbers. It's navigating these really complex ethical situations and making sure the oversight is actually working.
Which I suppose leaves a question for you listening. How much do you really think about the safeguards protecting the financial information you see every day? And what hidden ethical issues might be lurking even in places you trust?